Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the second episode of Holy Metal Podcast, a show that promotes Christian heavy metal across the globe. I'm your returning host, Bradley Biggs, and today I am both thrilled and honored to welcome three veterans of the Christian metal scene right here on the show. These gentlemen have been making metal for the Lord for more than 30 years now, and they join me to talk about the history of their band, as well as the soon-to-be remastered version of their debut release from 1988 titled Fight for Your Life. So listeners, it is my pleasure to introduce, from the band Valor, vocalist Michael Bruick, guitarist Chris Price, and drummer Jim Maxwell. Guys, thank you so much for being here. How are we doing today?
Doing good. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having us, Bradley.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. So you've all been musicians for many years now, right? When did you decide to take the talents that you've been blessed with musically and use them for God's glory?
I don't know. I can start, I guess. I had been doing this since I was probably in, college. And originally, actually, I came down to California. I think God led me down here from Oregon. By the way, go Ducks. But anyways, I was led down here. And I guess a fun story I might as well start with, since I got Mike here, too. When I first came down here, I went to San Jose. I don't know if I played a gig with some band or something, but I was down there. And then later that night, I got back to the house. It was early in the morning, and I was looking for a good church to go to. I was new in the area. And so I went down with these guys to a church in Concord and got lost, which is, I have a terrible sense of direction. Went to the wrong church, and that's where I met Mike. It's kind of interesting. Oh. He gave me his phone number. We changed it to, yes, real phone numbers in that day. And then Adam called me about a week later. And so I went down there, and that's kind of how Golgotha became, became Golgotha. Then later when Chris joined, it became Valor.
That's right. So Valor, I think it's safe to say, kind of formed from the ashes of Golgotha. Is that right?
Correct.
Interesting. So for you other two, have you been doing this your whole lives? Is this something that you picked up around the same time in college?
So this is Chris. I was a metalhead before I was a Christian, and I was playing sort of small bands, just garage bands, that sort of thing, for a number of years. Came out of the Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, except finally into the Metallica, Exodus, Slayer sort of genres. I really liked playing fast speed metal, so I learned how to play the Kill 'Em All album on 45. For those of you kids out there, 45 is the faster speed of the record, the vinyl. And so I actually learned that if you play the interval 1/4 higher, it actually matched tonally. So I learned how to play all the songs naturally and a fourth higher to be able to get faster and faster. And I became a Christian in 85 in November. And a few months later, I definitely sensed a calling of wanting to use the music to share this new wonder that I discovered. And I went to a show in, I believe it was Danville, California. It was put on by a church. It was like a Christian nightclub scene. It was pretty interesting. They had rock bands playing. And I ran into a guy by the name of Dave Johnston. Maybe you know him from a White Throne magazine, if I got the name of that magazine correct. And he gave me the number of Adam Alvarez. I called Adam Alvarez, left a message. Said, hey, I hear that you might have some connections for bands. Well, I didn't hear from him for a while. Well, Adam says that one day he was just going through his voicemails, which were on tape back then. And
nobody knows what that means.
Yeah, tape. What's tape? And so then Adam came across my name and said, hey, let's try this guy out. I came in, and it was Mike, Jim, who, by the way, we call Louie, and who else was there? Adam, I guess. And so I tried out, and it's funny, though, because my style was a bit different than what they were playing, and I think there was a little apprehension at first if they wanted to go that direction, but obviously...
Not for me. Not me.
And obviously the direction that we went in was a speed metal direction, and now you have the recordings of what that turned into.
Like you were saying, with learning to play Kill 'Em All at 45, I mean, that's an achievement right there. That's not something that most people can boast about, and I feel that that element really added to the quality of Fight for Your Life, just with the overall speed and power behind the album. I'd now like to move a little bit into the writing process for the songs. Before, you released an EP in 1986 titled Masquerade, and I'm just curious, did the writing for these tracks come easily to you guys?
Mike, you want to talk about some of that lyric?
This is the way I write. The band starts playing just anything. I get a chorus line, and then out of that chorus line, I start writing lyrics. So I would say that the lyrics came out of my walk, because I was walking with the Lord. I was in His Word, and so those lyrics just basically came. I never could sit down and write. I always had to have the band playing, and then wrote the lyrics out of that.
I like that. You know, whatever comes from the heart is always best, especially with this kind of music. And I'm curious to know, what was it about Christian metal during this time that really spoke to the four of you?
Well, go ahead, Chris.
Sorry. So I think for me, having played in the metal of its time, which was a lot of dark themes, satanic and death and all that kind of stuff, we felt as though, or you know, at least I believe we felt as though we were sheep in wolf's clothing to some extent. And we were coming into this scene hated by both the church and hated by the music scene. And the difficulty we had, and it's probably well documented, is much of the church was opposed to the style of music, and most of the music scene was opposed to the lyrics. And so we entered each gig ready for spiritual battle, and it was something else. And so I believe that when we approached the music, we approached it in terms of outreach, in where we have one opportunity maybe to get a message out, and we're going to take that opportunity and get the message out.
Yeah. And also back in that day too, this is Jim again, and there's a lot more opposition to this style in the Christian music because it wasn't real popular yet. So it was really hard. Some people called me a druid because I was playing faster drums, and I just said speed up country Western basically, and maybe you got the same thing. I don't know, but it was a lot different 30 years ago than it is now too. So there's a lot more challenges to that. We're kind of a new style in the Christian scene, kind of seeing what Slayer and stuff was doing, basically similar styles and so forth. Because that's what the kids wanted to hear. And that's where our hearts were at. We wanted to reach the kids, you know, that had wanted to give them the message of Jesus Christ. And we had more problems with the church at that point. A lot of churches, not all of them, of course. There's good churches, but some of the judgmental, pharisaical type churches were judging us for our style. And it's not the style, of course, it's what it's representing. So that's something that we don't see nowadays, but back in those days, in that atmosphere in the 80s, that's kind of what was happening about that time.
When you're out there touring and playing gigs, would you say that the overall touring experience for Valor was different than it may have been for other secular metal groups during that time?
Yeah, I think without a doubt. When we played out places, if we shared, you know, backstage areas with people, there was a lot more debauchery. I think that we would observe that we were, you know, sort of just helping each other, just try to be in the world but not of the world sort of mentality. And when we played on the stage, when we were talking, and Mike would actually break between songs and give some, you know, short pithy message. Sometimes you would hear scoffs and noises, but you know, other times you would hear someone sort of get into it and clap, and just some people you didn't expect. You'd see people staring and maybe wondering what we're talking about. Maybe some of the messages we're getting in. It was very, very interesting. It at least at the time, it looked very out of place, but we were convinced of the calling, so we continued.
Yeah, we had a we had a few death threats. I remember one in particular, a Satanist actually came up to me and he says, "I love your music, but I hate you. I don't know what to do. I'm confused." And I said, "Turn your life over to Jesus, man." And he basically didn't know what to do.
That was kind of enjoyed.
That was kind of fun in a way, but I didn't know if I was going to get killed when I walked out of the building. I wasn't sure what to do on that. Do you remember that, Mike?
No.
That is wild.
Yeah, it was sometimes dangerous. But in general, I think we had a pretty good reception when we played. It was different. People weren't used to it because it was newer. But the people that showed up, especially the kids, I think they really enjoyed it. It was something they could relate to. And, you know, a lot of people were telling you can't listen to anything fast or speed or anything like that at that time. So it was a refreshing thing. And I was the same way when I was younger. I always liked metal and speed metal and, you know, Judas Priest even before they existed back in the days of Deep Purple and stuff like that. And, you know, people look at me like you're crazy, but I was like that style. So I figured, what's wrong? Why can't Jesus Christ use that style? It's not the style. And people say, you can't do that. And of course, you know, we actually did it and it worked out. I think it worked out pretty good in general.
The level of ignorance we had to deal with in the church to me is just dumbfounding. Sometimes when I think that arguments were used like the beats in rock music are similar to those used by tribal pagans. Therefore, you're spreading that message. And I remember slack-jawed listening to this, but not having really a good response because, you know, these are church leaders talking. And, you know, in retrospect, I just think, you know, they certainly believed it. It wasn't helping, that's for sure.
I had something great happen. Just wanted to share this real quick. We were playing somewhere in Oakland, California, and I really feel bad. I can't remember the band's name, but they were young. They were younger than us. They were probably more like Chris's age, 21, 22, 23.
At the time.
That was Amon Ra.
And yeah. He said, he came up to me and he goes, "Yeah, man, I heard your song on the radio out of San Jose." And he goes, "I just wanted to let you know that I got my girlfriend pregnant, but I'm going to marry her and I'm going to take care of the kid." And that was really awesome. They were a secular band, you know, hardcore. And that was just a really fun memory. Yeah, he just came up and sat and started talking to me. And I just felt so good. I said, "Lord, that's just awesome."
And that's great. I really applaud you guys for being so forward-thinking when it came to the musical styles and really just being out there to plant a seed in the hearts of whoever was listening, because really, that's what it's about at the end of the day. Going along those lines, saying that you received death threats and you witnessed some things backstage that were just not part of who you guys were, can you talk a little bit about what it was like being out on the road and still striving every day to represent Christ?
Well, we really didn't go out on the road too much. It's mainly in the Bay Area and Los Angeles, basically West Coast stuff.
I see.
But basically, I guess the style of the music itself was something that was so new to us, also, you know, to people, that alone is kind of what people kind of focused on and not even, you know, what they're thinking. It was just weird back in those days. But my whole thing was because of the love for Jesus Christ, and I want to share who he was. That was my main number one, and is still my main goal with anything I try and do. Obviously, I fall way short, you know, at times, but that was my number one goal that kept me going anyway, because sometimes you're staying up late and had to go to work the next day, and it could be difficult, but that's the main motivation of the whole thing back in those days.
And, you know, I never even knew all that was going on that much. I guess I was in some kind of shell.
You forgot.
Other than my wife telling everybody, "No, you don't want to buy one of their albums." And they go, "No, we want one of his albums." These were people from our church who said, "No, you don't want to buy this album."
Wow.
I don't think she was our marketing manager.
No, she was not the marketing.
Overall, I mean, it sounds like the people who knew what you guys were about generally responded well. If you had to boil it down to one central message that tied the songs together, what would that message be?
I could do it in one sentence, probably. There's judgment coming. It's end times, but there's also hope. So
the death,
judgment is there, but there's a way out, and it's through Jesus Christ's blood. That's the key to the whole thing.
I love it.
That was probably more than one sentence, but that was pretty good.
He's a professor, so he's going to correct all our errors. I'll let you know now.
but I totally agree. I think what ties them together is the exposing of the predicament that is being lost in sin, and the resolution that is the redemptive act of Jesus, and the necessary state of faith.
Amen. Amen to that. Is there a song from the album that is the most fun to play live in front of an audience?
Well, I know what I'd say. I'd say Fight for Your Life is pretty fun because I wrote the guitar part, the guitar solo, if you've heard it, for two guitarists. And there's only been a few times we've had two guitar players, but it's kind of a wild ride guitar solo. And so I enjoy playing that. And Burned, because it's pretty much in your face, and I get to dive bomb to Loose Strings in it.
And I love that.
Then, of course, we've got one song that's a minute long. That's Accepting.
That's one of my favorites.
I think we made that up in the studio. Long, didn't we?
Accepting. Yeah.
We had a couple people singing in the background. That was just a weird thing. But anyway, I kind of agree. I like the Fight for Your Life, too, because I like things that move and fast stuff. And we're actually going to be doing a video on that one, too. It's coming up, too. So a live, the remastered version, too. That's a little sneak peek about what's coming, too. I guess we'll get to that in a little bit. But I had to sneak that in.
I'm really glad you brought that up because, you know, here we are, right, more than 30 years after the original release of Fight for Your Life. And I would love to know about the motivation that's keeping you guys going to re-release the record after all these years and remaster it.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually remember the story of how this kind of came about. Is it was on social media, a number of previous fans, or I guess, you know, existing fans, but, you know, obviously of the old material, were posting, you know, asking for remasters, re-releases, or just more copies of the album. And I believe it was Dan Beverly, a friend of mine who we went to seminary together, posted it, and it turned into a sort of a viral post on his own wall, which he has thousands of followers. And finally I told Jim, you know, I'm into it. If we can, you know, get certain people involved, like Vic, who from now on we'll call him Grok. And, we had Grok involved, and we actually
first started
talking about new material, but people really wanted new pressings of the album. So Jim put some work into it. Jim could probably speak more about where that is.
Yeah, what happened on that is I hadn't really listened to the album for a long time, and my son, who was killed in the car wreck back in 2011, kept telling me, and this is kind of dedicated to him too, because he was always telling me, why don't you guys do this again? I go, I don't know if that's really going to happen. And so just over time, I kept seeing these things on the internet, you know, somebody's pirating the music and stuff. And I remember that chat. It was Dan Beverly, and that's kind of how it all began born. And I think he said something like, I want the credit for this thing starting again or something. And, you know, that's kind of cool in a way, too. But the motivation was just, I mean, we might be older now, but we still can play the same style. And I'd like to put out some new stuff, too. That's what we kind of were waiting to. This Fight Your Life project has taken a lot more time and weird stuff going on and opposition than I ever thought. And it's actually gotten to a way new level than I thought I would ever get to, too. Originally, Chris and I were just basically going to have it remastered. And then we started working on some new material. And then about 30 other people got involved in it, including, you know, Piper and Jared and a bunch of other people and stuff. And then we actually did a professional remaster of it and went to Arizona. So I credit Piper and Catherine down there at, what was her thing? 13.5, is it?
I thought it was 321, but there's a few numbers, studios.
Yeah, Steve Studios number, and then Nito Mastering was Piper's, too. And then Jared Kitva, who, of course, was works with Iron Maiden, and all these people took an interest in it, and this thing really turned out awesome. So that's something I wasn't kind of, didn't know it would go to this level to start with. And then we brought Mike down, too. He came down and he can discuss a little of that if he wants to, but that's kind of where this kind of went farther, and I didn't expect it to get to this level, to tell you the truth. So
in order to do the work, we actually went back to the original 2-inch 24 track tapes, and they had to sit there and bake those to get those back so that they would peel without the emulsion coming off. And there were some challenges with that, but they were able to transfer it into Pro Tools. And from Pro Tools, we evaluated every single track of every single song. And we, you know, determined that some of the tones of some of them needed fixing. And so we fixed them. And the work that went into it by Catherine and then later Piper and Jared, you're going to be really surprised by the tone. I mean, I'm really proud of the sound that came out of this thing. It, in my mind, it's what it probably should have sounded like back then, but it's not, I'm not going to call it a modern tone because that sort of wouldn't be appropriate to modernize in a remaster, but it definitely got the fog out of the recording because one little bit of trivia for you. When we recorded Fight for Your Life back in, was it Dragon Studios?
1902.
Yeah, back in 1902 when we recorded Fight for Your Life in, I believe it's called Dragon Studios in Redwood City.
Dragon Studios, yep.
Yeah, I don't think it's around anymore, but my amp, I had a Marshall JMP 100, and it was dying. And I... you know, what was I, 21, 22, something like that. I had no money. And so we were just doing everything we could just to make it work. And so we had to put noise gates on that amp to keep the squealing and the thing was just dying and telling everybody it was dying. And it was, we had to put the noise gates at such a high threshold that it had an impact on the overall sound. And our mix engineer, you know, he did everything he could. And, you know, we kind of thought it would be different anyway. When it was released, you know, I was a little underwhelmed with the tone. I loved the songs. I loved a lot of the performances. It was the tones were a problem. Well, we were able to really address that, and I'm really happy. And I think people are going to be excited by this.
It's really good. And there's another quick story on that too, that almost made this not happen. I think there's been a satanic involvement the entire way. There's been a lot of roadblocks on this, and there's 3 2-inch tapes. And Chris gave them back to me, and I gave them to Piper. And the first one was the one, it was a defective tape, I guess, to start with. And back in those days in 1988, some of these things actually were manufactured defective. So they didn't think they're going to be able to fix the first one. So there's 3 or 4 songs on that one that probably weren't going to get used. And we just kind of accepted that. And it's like, well, that's, I guess, the end of that. And then somehow these guys did their magic. And I mean, we had the best in the business working on this. And they tediously, like Chris was saying, worked on this thing and actually got it to work, which is just unbelievable. So kudos to them again. I can't say enough.
That is just so incredibly exciting. I know I am looking forward to the finished product, the remastered product, so much. And I would love to know when it's going to be released. When is it going to be put out there?
We're looking at October 31st if we have no caterpillars, which means things that go wrong. And probably we want to release a few of the online, you know, digitally ones out before that. So we're trying to work that out now. But we're going to have vinyl. And we're going to have CDs. Ooh. And so we're going to have 300 of the original ones as they are. And then we're going to have, I don't know exactly, we're going to start with, you know, maybe 500 of the newer remastered ones. I'm not sure. So, oh, and one thing I forgot too is the bass parts were really weak on this old recording and the rhythm guitar. So we actually, Chris redid the rhythm guitars, and we had Uriah Duffy, who's, you know, Whitesnake's bass player, great guy.
Oh, yeah.
He came in and he did redid the bass parts, and just awesome sounding. And it's just, you know, I can't say enough about him. And he loves it. He's great with it. And it's exciting to have him on board with this thing too.
Hey, I wanted to back up just for something real quick here. So I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I was in from soul music to Hendrix to everything. And my, I, I played nightclubs forever, other people's music. So basically my vocal style came out of that. I did a couple original bands, but when I came to the Lord, I wasn't a metal singer. I wasn't a speed metal singer. And that's what I really loved about this band is nobody was saying, hey, we want somebody that sounds like this or somebody that sounds like that. We just basically kind of morphed together. And then what came out of that was the Valor thing. And I think at the first album, it was heavy metal and then speed with Chris's, of course, being the speed part. And so it was really kind of a fun project to see how it morphed out of people that, personally, for me, that didn't even actually really do metal. You know, I liked stuff. I liked Zeppelin and, you know, all those bands from those days, but I never really sang that. I just did nightclub 7 days a week, 4 hours a night, other people's music. So it was, anyway.
And the Fight for Your Life album, too, was recorded really quickly, too. We didn't have much of a budget. So basically, I know I did the drum parts in one session. And I think we did most of them in one take. Yeah, we did a lot of them in one take. We just didn't have the finances to do it at the time, too. And
oh, wow. One take.
So pretty much most of it. And so
the vocals were all done in one take.
Yeah. And the drum thing in those days, if you made one mistake anywhere, you had to redo the whole dang song. And I remember one song, I got through the whole thing, and I messed up the very last cymbal. I had to redo the whole song, and I was so mad. It was,
oh man,
it was late too. And then, of course, I'm getting toward the end of the song, and I'm like, don't mess it up. Don't mess it up. Please don't mess it up. You know? You know, that was another thing too. In those days, you didn't have like you can go back and you know punch something in. For guitars, you could, but not the drums. Drums are still tough to do that. But back in those days, it's an all or nothing, baby. And boy, that was nerve wracking. I have been
through all that too. Without a doubt, I believe it was Jim. It was either you or Mike who was talking about satanic influence in kind of the obstacles for remastering the album and. Once again, I just want to applaud you guys for pushing through it. Kind of my mantra is, you know, when things start to go wrong, it's kind of a sign that you're on the right path. So I just want to commend all of you in continuing to move forward with the remastering process. It sounds like you definitely have your hands full, especially if you're planning on re-releasing it on vinyl and CD. And I'd also really like to plug the pre-orders for the album. Where can fans go to pre-order copies?
We're still setting that up. As we go, but it's going to be through our webpage, and we probably have an outside distributor too. So our
valorband.com.
Valorband.com, our website. We're going to have something on there for email lists and all that. We're still getting that set up. We're going to have some shirts. We've already designed the shirts. We're going to have some maybe some stickers, things like that. So we're kind of in the infant stages of that too. There's a lot to do, believe me, a lot more than I thought. Pot stickers, yeah.
Yeah, you guys have your hands full, no doubt. So, can we as fans expect any new Valor music in the future?
So, Riley, yeah, we actually have an entire album worth of material that we're finishing up, that we're ready to start rehearsing and start doing the early recording of. And so I can't comment on a date at this time, but I can tell you that the material is a lot more mature. Now, by mature, I don't mean old people music. I mean, at least in my opinion, the lyrics are, you know, more representative of someone who has sort of lived life a little bit longer than maybe what you saw with Fight for Your Life. We have a song that actually is a dialogue between a theist and an atheist, for example. So things like that, I think this stuff is going to be very relevant for today. Whereas I think most of the Fight for Your Life was meant for the lost. This album is going to have more broad appeal. There'll be messages for Christians as well. And, you know, answers to hard questions as well.
Well, all I can say is I can't wait. I'm really excited to see what comes from that project, as well as from the newly remastered Fight for Your Life. So Gentlemen, I want to thank you again so much for taking the time to come talk to us about the album. Folks, you heard it right here. Valorband.com is where you can go once pre-orders are available. And guys, I really hope to have you back on the show again at some point to talk about the album once it's out. I appreciate your time.
That'd be great. Yeah. We're on Facebook page too, just so they can check out too, just let them know.
And Valor Band Official on Instagram. That's where we do the most amount of posting at this moment. So yeah. you'll see updates about the re-release and pre-orders and maybe little trailers. And Jim mentioned we're actually shooting two music videos for this album. It's actually being shot next week or next month. So we're going to be releasing that too. So definitely keep an eye out on social for us.
And a documentary also. So the two songs we're
doing, documentary too.
Documentary on the band, and we're doing two professional videos. Fight for Your Life and Didn't Air, the two songs on for those videos.
Oh, that's great. So yeah, new videos then and a documentary to look forward to.
Yep.
All right, we will stay posted for that. Thank you so much, guys, for being here. It was great to have you on.
Bless you, man. I enjoyed it.
And hey, if it weren't for you listeners out there, I wouldn't have the pleasure of doing this. So many thanks for your support. Be sure to reach out to Valor Band on Facebook and Instagram. Let them know what you think of their album. And in the meantime, be sure to give me a follow on Instagram at Holy Metal Podcast for the latest updates. I'm your host, Bradley Biggs, and I will see you back here for episode 3. God bless.